Welcome to Food Safety, The Facts. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dawn Schaefer, your host for Food Safety, The Facts, our series of food safety podcasts which analyse topics and issues relevant to food manufacturing and presents the facts in an easy-to-understand manner. You've joined us for this, our third in the series, and we're exploring food safety and food safety culture. Previously, we've taken a deep dive into what food safety culture is and what it means for organisations working in the sector. We've also taken a look at a 4C culture model, which we've been using to understand and improve your food safety culture. Don't forget, as part of this series, we're giving away a free tool that allows you to measure your food safety culture and to implement a food safety improvement programme. Details of the free tool and how to access it are given at the end of the podcast. And I'm delighted to say that here to give us a flavour of how that's done is John Husband. Regular listeners will remember John's a director at Tutrain, one of the UK's leading food manufacturing focused training providers. And there's not much he doesn't know about food safety culture. In fact, Tutrain and John, alongside the University of Sunderland, developed Enlighten, which was one of the world's first food safety culture models that was designed to help manufacturers understand where their organisation stands in terms of food safety culture. John's also a BRC-approved principal trainer and has a really diverse background over his 30 years' experience in helping companies in the food industry. John was one of the first BRC, now BRCGS-approved training providers, and in 2010, he became an approved principal training partner. So I'm sure you'll all agree, he's just the man to answer the burning questions about food safety culture. So let's start with food safety culture and how it's implemented. How should a company working in food or food manufacturing approach developing and implementing a food safety culture programme?
The issues we have here is most people's idea of a culture programme is circulating a questionnaire they found on the internet, a quick review of the responses and developing some action points. Yes, in its most basic form, this would be classed as a culture programme, but with a bit more understanding of what food safety culture models and tools are available, then by using the food safety culture model that is most appropriate for the company, they can get so much more benefit from it. And I would say, in some cases, by running a basic questionnaire, you can actually do more damage than good.
Okay, so that's not good then. So what do they need to do first and what are the benefits of doing it properly?
For me, in the sort of the programs that we've actually implemented, one of the things that has come out is that the company learn a lot more than just about food safety culture. So to give you an example of that, quite often, if you've got a problem with communication in food safety culture, then you've probably got problems with communication across the whole company, operational and production. So when you do the program and if you follow all stages of it, then yes, it will identify the level of food safety culture, but it will also raise other issues. And I just think that companies could get so much more out of it by applying the full program.
Okay, so how did they start that? What's the first step?
So to start a food safety culture program, the first thing is to set up a team. And once you have selected the team leader will need to select people who are enthusiastic and want to be part of improving culture in the company and to sell the vision of what they are trying to achieve. I would also say that, you know, when you're actually selecting the people to be in the team, you need to try and identify those people that have the ability to influence others.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So if the company has a workforce with a high percentage of personnel whose first language is not English, then make sure the team has someone who represents them. Yep. And I would say to finish off with, the team should comprise of personnel from different areas of the business. So HR, operations, engineering and technical. The food safety culture team needs to be chaired by someone from the senior management team. And I would also say that that person should preferably be from the operations or the production side and not the technical side. So once we've actually got the team in place, then what we would actually recommend is that the team undertakes a 3D learning model exercise.
That sounds interesting. What is a 3D model?
This is a technique that's been developed by a guy called Sir Clive Woodward. And some of you may know who Clive Woodward is, but he is the actual, or was, the rugby manager, or the England rugby manager, when England won the World Cup in 2003. And he believes one of the key reasons England won the World Cup was they applied the 3D learning model. So if we actually look at the 3D learning model, it actually comprises of discover, distill and do. So what we can do is we can actually go through and what we mean by discover, distill and do. So we're going to start off with discover.
Can I just take you back to that? I'm guessing distilling is disappointingly not anything to do with whiskey and gin.
No, unfortunately not. Although after you've finished this podcast, you might feel like one, but there you go. No.
Tell me about discover. What's discover about?
The way that he describes discover is that what you would need to do is you would require the team that you've put together to undertake a large amount of research to determine the best food safety culture model and tools they feel that they would be most appropriate for their company. And I think this is also getting the buy-in so people understand what sort of models and what tools are out there that they should be using. The good thing here is that there is lots of resources out there that the team can access, and that includes podcasts, YouTube videos, webinars, books and conferences. So when researching a food safety culture model, an important part is understanding the information you're going to get from the model and how practical that information will be in assisting you to develop a food safety culture plan. This is crucial if you are needing to meet the BRCGS Global Standard for Food Safety requirements. So that's what we mean by discover. So we then move into distill. So distill is once we've collected all this information, we take all of the information collected and develop an overview document that clearly explains the model and the tools which you are going to be using. And the purpose of the actual document or the overview document is it should be used to provide guidance to managers, supervisors and operatives on how you are going to undertake the food safety culture program. As well as explaining which food safety culture program you're going to use, it should also detail what input managers and supervisors and operatives will have in the food safety culture program. So then that leaves us with the do bit, which as far as I'm concerned, aligns itself with the BRCGS Global Standard for Food Safety requirements to develop an action plan to improve food safety culture within the company. As the team go through the different stages of the 3D learning model, it's essential that the food safety culture team meet on a regular basis to oversee the implementation of the food safety culture program and provide the required support and resources.
Okay. Once everyone understands which culture model and tools they're going to be using, what's the next step? How does that roll out across the business?
Well, for me, the next step is that the team needs to develop what we would call a communication plan. And what we mean by a communication plan is the communication plan should detail how you intend to talk to the staff about what you're doing and what input you require from them. And I think this is a key part that companies don't communicate what they're actually doing and what they expect from individuals. And then what we would like to see is that the senior management team within the organisation proactively promotes the communication plan to all staff. So at the same time as developing a communication plan, the team also needs to develop a project plan. And as far as I'm concerned, the project plan is really, it's like a roadmap. It's taking you from where you are today to where you're going to be at the end of the programme. So the project plan needs to clearly detail the activities to be undertaken, the responsibilities, timescales and methods for review. I would also say that it is really good practice that once we've actually developed the project plan, that the project plan is actually put on staff boards so people can clearly see the different activities and the timescales that they're going to be carried out. And also, I think the plan needs to be kept up to date so people can see exactly where we are with the culture programme.
It goes back to what you were saying about buy-in, because if people see progress and see things moving and understand the process, they're far more likely to be engaged.
Yes, I would agree with that.
I know that you've been involved in developing the 4C culture model with Dr. Derek Watson of University of Sunderland. That developed the principles we've covered in previous podcasts. So if you do want to know more about the 4C food safety culture model, listen to episode 2, How to Get Food Safety Culture Back in the Boardroom. But let's say the team's done its discover, distill and do, and the culture model the company has chosen is the 4C culture model. What would the do element of the 3D learning model look like?
The best way to start off is by giving you an overview of the different elements of the 4C food safety culture model, and then I will provide guidance and my experience on each of the elements.
Okay.
The food safety culture program starts off with issuing a food safety culture questionnaire to all staff. The information from the safety culture questionnaire is then collated and analysed. And once we've analysed the data, a process of triangulation needs to take place.
Okay, so I've got two questions from that. And what kind of, when you say a questionnaire, can that be electronic or hard copy?
It can be electronic or hard copy. I would suggest you're better off using an electronic copy because invariably where you've got an electronic copy, then a lot of the statistics that you need and the analysis can be done by the Enlighten 4C food safety culture software. Whereas if you take a hard copy, then that data needs to be transposed into a Excel spreadsheet or some sort of software that would allow you to analyse the data.
So it's far better in terms of man hours and resources, that sort of thing, to do it electronically if you can.
It is. And I mean, I think if you actually look at a lot of the programmes now and the questionnaires, I mean, most of them are very sort of mobile friendly. I mean, if you look at the sort of the Enlighten 4C model that we are promoting, you can actually complete the questionnaire on a reasonable sized phone. It works really well. So yes, it makes life much easier if you can actually complete it electronically.
Brilliant. And then you mentioned the term triangulation. Myself included and some of our listeners will not be familiar with that term. So can you give us an overview of what you mean by triangulation?
Yes, triangulation. So quite often what happens is when we actually send out the questionnaire and people complete it, then we get information back that we don't believe represents the working practices and the activities within the company. So the triangulation is where we validate information the respondents have provided on the questionnaire to ensure that the responses are in line with the company working practices, like I said. So triangulation generally is undertaken through field interviews and focus groups. So when we talk about field interviews, we're talking about going out and having a one-to-one interview with members of staff. So by completing the food safety questionnaire, the field interviews and the focus groups, the company have completed the data collection and analysis section of the 4C's food safety culture model. And all that now remains is for the company to develop and implement a food safety culture plan.
I see. So it's almost validating one form of the information you've been given by double checking and then triple checking and pulling all of that together. That's what triangulation is.
It is. I mean, I think that's a good word. And I think a lot of people in the food industry will understand validation. So it's validating the data to make sure that it's accurate.
Brilliant. From the overview you've just given, the starting point is the questionnaire, and assuming the company have chosen the Enlightened Food Safety Culture questionnaire, what do they need to consider before issuing the questionnaire to their staff?
Well, the first action the company needs to do is they need to calculate the sample size required to give a known confidence level, that the survey results are a true reflection of the group. When we talk about the group being the total workforce of the company. So if you've got a large company, 600 employees, then it could be quite difficult to get everybody in the company to actually undertake the survey. So what we do is we actually do a sample size, but we can use statistics to identify what size that sample size should be. So a standard survey would normally have a sample size based on a 95% confidence level and a 5% margin of error to ensure that the analysts of respondents are accurate and reflect of the whole group. An example would be if you have a workforce of, say, 450 employees, we can then calculate the sample size required for 95% confidence level would be 207 respondents. So if the company is going to use a sample size with a 95% confidence level, then an important consideration is that the sample is randomly selected across the group.
So I get what you mean. It can't all be people from technical or all be people from one area of the organisation. It has to be a random selection, because otherwise you're going to have results that are skewed one way or the other.
Yes. And I would say the two areas that, well, it's probably three, I suppose. The three areas we need to think about is, do we have different shifts within the company?
Yeah.
Do we have different departments, which will be a yes. And also then you could look at the different roles, so senior managers, managers, operatives and technical. So we need to make sure that we've got a random selection that includes all of those elements.
That makes absolute sense. So now we've calculated the sample size, what other considerations would there need to be made, or what other considerations do we need to take into account before we issue the questionnaire?
Well, depending on which food safety culture model you are using, you should determine what information you want to get from the survey. And will the data you collect provide you with that information? I think too many people take a survey, issue it, get all of this information back, and then somebody says, can we analyse this aspect? And then when you look at the information, you can't do that because you haven't collected the right information.
Yeah, I totally understand that. But could you explain what you mean by the different sections of the questionnaire?
Where a company is using the Enlightened 4C culture model, then the questionnaire is split into four sections: control, communication, cooperation, and competency. Now, it doesn't matter which sort of survey or questionnaire you use, most questionnaires will be split into something not dissimilar. So it may be useful just to take those questions relating to, say, communication and analyse them by different roles within the company or by different individual departments.
So I see what you mean, because, for example, maybe people that are in more senior roles feel like they get lots of communication, where maybe people that are working shifts or are working in different roles and not in senior leadership roles, for example, might feel that communication is poor, just as an example.
Yes.
Okay, great.
So the next consideration is whether the company is going to distribute the questionnaire in different languages. And where you do distribute it in different languages, it's important that you translate the questionnaire is accurate. And finally, it's good to set a time frame the company intends to take to complete the survey. But when we set the time frame, we need to remember the survey needs to be a random sample. So covering the different shifts, the different departments and roles within the company. And depending on the shift patterns, this may take longer than people expect. So yeah, so those are the types of things you need to consider before you distribute the questionnaire.
So the questionnaire's gone out. It's been distributed and completed. So I guess the next stage is to analyse the data.
It is, that's correct. And now comes what I would say is the fun part.
Okay, understanding a little bit more about what you consider to be fun, John.
Well, analysing the data. Highlight of the project.
How do they go about doing that?
Where a company has used a hard copy questionnaire, then the company needs to transpose the data into the Excel spreadsheet or statistical software package. And as discussed earlier, we can then analyse the data based on the data plan agreed at the beginning of the project. With regards to the 4C enlightened food safety culture model, we would recommend the following levels of analysis.
And so what tool then do companies need for data analysis?
There's a number of different tools. I mean, the first one I would say is that those companies that are using the Enlighten model, then basically a lot of the analysis is actually done by Enlighten. So it will calculate all of the averages, it will do the significance testing and things like that, and provide you with individual reports that can be downloaded. If you don't have Enlighten, then there are two other options. The first one would be using Excel and putting the data into Excel and then analysing it through Excel. And then the other is that there are specific software packages out there. One in particular is SPSS that does statistical analysis of data. So you could use SPSS as well, or a similar software package.
Okay, so there's a number out there. So we've got the data, we know what tool we're going to use to analyse it. What do we do next?
Yeah, I mean, what we do is that we've identified that there needs to be like a hierarchy and you work your way through. So the first one I would always suggest to a company is calculate the average score for the company. And this gives you a general understanding of whether we've got a negative or a positive culture. So the way we do that is the Enlighten model uses the Leichhardt scale, which is a 5-point scale ranging from strongly disagree through to strongly agree. By allocating a score to each point, so an example being strongly disagree equals 1 through to strongly agree equals 5, you can then calculate the average company score. The average company score range will be from 1, demonstrating a negative food safety culture, to 5, a positive food safety culture. So once we've calculated the average score for the company, this provides a good indication of the level of food safety culture within the company. And the method of calculating the average can then be used on subgroups, cross-tabulation and individual questions, which we are now going to look at.
Okay, so tell me about subgroups.
Subgroups. So what we've done is we've started off and we've got a basic picture of what we believe is the food safety or the level of food safety culture within the company. And now what we need to do is we now need to go a little bit further down and break that data into subgroups. So this is where you filter the data and analyse the responses from the subgroups. So the 4C food safety culture model can be broken down into the following subgroups. So you could analyse by the 4C model covering the control, the communication, the cooperation and the competency. So those are the different sections of the actual questionnaire. Where a site has multiple sites, or where a company, sorry, has multiple sites, you could then analyse it by the individual sites. You could analyse it by the roles and responsibilities. So that could be senior managers, managers and supervisors, technical, QAs and operatives. And the final one would be the first language is English and the last language is not English. So there are a number of different subgroups that you could actually start looking at.
Wow, it could get really detailed and granular, couldn't it?
It can. If you do break down the subgroups, it does start to give you a very strong picture of the culture within your company.
And presumably what comes from that, John, then, is an ability for an organisation to look at, okay, well, it seems to be quite positive here, but actually in this area or with this subgroup, this is where we need to concentrate our efforts, rather than thinking, oh, gosh, the company thing showed that we've got, maybe a one or a two, a negative food safety culture across the whole organization. But actually, when you drill down to it, it may just be within certain subsets that that's the case.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think you can look at it that way, that quite often that what you need to do is you could have very good scores across the whole questionnaire, but you might have certain sections of it that are actually pulling the rest of the scores down. And
yeah,
if you separate that out, then you'll find that the sort of the general score is very good. Also, what you might want to look at is the sort of the different culture levels across the different groups. And to do that, we then need to do cross-tabulation of subgroups. So this is where you take the data from an individual subgroup and compare it with information from another subgroup. An example of this could be taking two subgroups such as managers and operatives and comparing the data on communication. And in addition, you can also use a two-tailed significant test to determine if there is a significant difference between the data from the two subgroups.
Okay, so that's pretty much what we were saying before, was some people in communication might feel they're very well communicated with or have access to communication where others don't.
Yes, no, I agree totally. So that then leaves us really with the sort of the individual questions. So as you can see, we've started globally at the whole company. We've then looked at the subgroups, and now we're down to the sort of the individual questions. And for me, it's a little bit like a funnel. So we're starting at the top and we're working our way down. So the final level of data analysis is to analyse the five higher scoring questions and the five lower scoring questions. The key here is to analyse the data further and determine if the lower scores are due to a particular influence of a subgroup. I would also say that when you're actually doing the analysis and you're actually calculating your averages, you may find that a 5-point Likert scale to be a bit of a blunt measure. So when calculating the mean average, you should use at least one decimal place to provide a larger spread of data. However, another option would be to use the median average rather than the mean average. So those are the sort of the different areas or the different levels that we would need to analyse the data.
Okay, so we're doing all of that. We've done all of that. How do we get to our conclusions?
What we need to do is, once all the data has been analysed, then you can draw your conclusions from the data. And when defining your conclusions, you may identify data you believe, in your experience, not to be in line with work in practice within the factory.
Okay, can you give me an example?
An example of this could be where you get a 95% of respondents saying, strongly agree to, I believe the company has an effective staff suggestion system, yet you know there is no company suggestion system in place.
Okay.
So where you get this type of anomaly with the data, then you need to validate it through one-to-one interviews. And this is what we were talking about earlier, the triangulation.
Yeah, that is important, isn't it?
It is.
So it's important to understand at the beginning of the process what data you want to analyse to ensure that food safety culture questionnaire is set up the right way to get the information you want from it.
Yes, you know, I mean, I can't emphasise enough is that, you know, you need to understand the questionnaire and you need to make sure it's going to provide you with the right data.
So you've got this great questionnaire, you've got fantastic data, which you tell me it's been fun to extract the data from. And to analyse it. So next up is one-to-one interviews. So can you explain what a company needs to know in order to conduct one-to-one interviews properly?
Yeah. And I think before I go into the one-to-one interviews, this is the area where people, or companies, I should say, sort of stop. So lots of companies do the questionnaires, but then they don't feel the need to undertake the one-to-one interviews. And I would say that is a major mistake. So anyway, just to give you an overview of one-to-one interviews. So one-to-one interviews are all about verifying that the data from the questionnaire is a true reflection of the company's working practice and activities. So we start off by extracting from the survey results the data we would like to validate. So with regards to how many one-to-one interviews a company needs to undertake, I would recommend a minimum of 15% of the questionnaire sample size. And the type of data that needs to be validated determines who you would approach to be involved in the one-to-ones. So the next step is to develop an overview of the topics you would like to cover in the one-to-one interviews. And then what you need to do is select relevant personnel to be involved in the one-to-ones and give them an overview of what a one-to-one interview is and the topics you would like to cover. Once you've done that, you then need to ask them if they would be willing to participate in the interviews. You also need to explain that all information collected will be kept anonymous and no names will appear in the final report.
I guess that is important because in some cases you might be wanting to speak to people who wouldn't normally be involved in anything like this. And it's one thing to fill in a questionnaire that you know to be anonymous, but it might start to feel a little bit like you're being grilled, I guess, if you're being asked to then come into an interview about it.
It is. And I think that is the skill of the person who's actually doing the one-to-one interviews, because all we're doing is collecting information to actually verify the data that we've actually got. So really, the purpose of the one-to-one interview is to collect the information to evaluate the response data, as I've just said. So if we go to the previous example, I believe the company has an effective staff suggestion system. Then how could we validate that particular question? So what we could do is, if we're actually interviewing somebody, we could say to them, could you please explain how staff suggestion systems work? Now, in that scenario, they shouldn't be able to explain anything to you because there isn't any in place. So therefore, we can take that information back with us. So the purpose of the interview is not to tell that they are wrong, but just to collect information to verify the data. And for those listeners that have undertaken an audit, they will be familiar with open questions. And it was Rudyard Kipling who said, I have five friends, they have served me well all my life, and they are who, what, why, when, and how. By using those words within sentences, you can extract information you need to validate the data. And it's a really good tool.
Kate, so do you have any other recommendations about how it's best to conduct these interviews?
Yes. I mean, for me, what we should be doing is we should be undertaking the interviews away from the sort of the working environment. And if we can actually get like a meeting room, then I would agree that it should be done there. And also, there should be no other employees around. So it's a one-to-one between you and that person. And I have to say, my general experience, people are quite open when you ask the questions.
People like to be involved in things, don't they?
I think they do. I think that's one of the very positive thing is that, you know, you've got people there that have been working at the company for a long time. And quite often, nobody has actually asked them their sort of understanding or their opinion, and quite often it's very good when you hear what people have got to say, and usually they are very, very open with you.
And I mean, I would guess it's a good opportunity as well, John, to collect anecdotal comments, because there's value to those too.
Yes, it is. So, you know, the final part of any interview is also a good opportunity to collect, as you say, anecdotal comments. So what do we mean by this is, at the end of the interview, you may want to ask, are there any other issues you encounter on a daily basis that were not covered by the questionnaire? And in my experience, asking those types of questions can bring to light some very relevant information. Yeah, no, it is. It is. And it all helps to build a picture, doesn't it?
Absolutely, because the questionnaire can only be finite. It can't ask every single question. So, yeah, that anecdotal information might throw up other areas to ask further questions about in another questionnaire.
Yes, yeah, yeah, no, definitely. So that's the basic overview of how to carry out one-to-one interviews.
Okay, so by my reckoning, that leaves only the focus groups.
Yes, it does. So now we have a large amount of information from the analysis of questionnaires and the one-to-one interviews. The information needs to be reviewed and topics selected that the company feel would benefit from further analysis. So the topics the company choose should relate to areas that it would like to improve, and the outcome from the focus group will end up forming the food safety culture plan. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you three examples of the types of topics that we've actually used within companies that we've actually been into to assist with the food safety culture improvement program. And the first one, which I think is a really important one, is gateway into the business. So you might say, what do we mean by gateway into the business? Well, what we actually mean is reviewing the induction process and the effectiveness of training new employees receive when entering the business. Now, another one could be management support for food safety culture. I think that sort of explains itself, but determining employees' perception on the level of support given by managers and supervisors for food safety culture. And then the third one, evaluating the effectiveness of communication, which is determining the effectiveness of communication at different levels within the organisation.
And these are important topics for the focus groups, because I think in previous podcasts, we've definitely talked about induction and how that can be the point where people say, this is how we do things around here, and how that can set the culture. So these are really key points to be bringing up in focus groups.
It is. And I think the one that you've picked out is a really good example, because depending on how well we carry out the induction and the training of new personnel, it certainly can affect the food safety culture. But on the other side, there could be a business benefit. So if you've got a large number of employees and you have a high turnover of employees, one of the things that may help that to reduce the sort of the turnover could be providing people with much better induction and training at the beginning. So not only can you improve the food safety culture, there's quite often an argument that you could actually improve business performance as well.
Absolutely. And so in terms of these focus groups, do you have a preferred format or a recommended way to go about them?
Yes, and I'm sure there's many different ways, but the way that we like to do it is, and it'll depend on the size of organisation, but selecting two or three groups. Each group would generally comprise of around about 9 people. The selection of individuals for the focus group will depend on the topics to be discussed. I mean, in some instances, you might just want to get together supervisors and managers. In other instances, you might want to spread across operatives, technical and managers, but it'll depend on the subject and the topic that you want to discuss. So I would explain to the focus group, all comments made during the focus group are obviously confidential, and ask if anybody has an issue with recording the focus group, because a lot of good information comes out and it's quite difficult to catch it all. So by recording it, you can then sit down with a cup of coffee, listen to it, and you'll be surprised some of the comments you actually pick up in the background, which is really good.
Okay, and so how do you run the focus groups?
Well, what we do is if we take the 9, we take them into a room, we break them down into 3 groups, comprising obviously of 3 employees in each group. So as we said, it may be beneficial to create subgroups comprising of individuals from the same role, or we may want a mix. And then what we do is we provide each group with a flip chart and we ask them to brainstorm the first topic, detailing their positive and negative points on the flip chart. And I would normally give them about 20 minutes to do that. So once they've collated the positive and negative comments, I would then get each group to feed back to the other groups and the points they have raised. I would also allocate 10 minutes to each group for their feedback. And then I would repeat the same process for the next 2 topics.
Okay, and location, where would you recommend?
Yeah, I think, I mean, what we need to think about is we need to try and create a relaxed atmosphere. So generally, it's good if we can pick a meeting room. And I always like to provide things like tea and coffee and things like that. So just to give it a bit more of a relaxation.
Biscuits?
Yes, yes, you can throw biscuits in. As long as they've got no carbs in, apparently.
Oh, really? Oh, there we go. So you've completed all three focus groups, and then what would you do after that?
Yeah, it's just a case of collecting up the flip charts and the recordings. And then what you need to do is you need to go through the recordings and the flip charts and document common positive, negative issues. So when I say common, what I'm saying is you're looking for the same issues that each group have raised. And it's uncanny sometimes that obviously you're not sat or you're not with each group as they're doing their deliberations, but it's uncanny how many groups bring up the same issues. So it's looking for those common issues raised by the individual groups.
Those themes, and they're usually easy to spot.
Yeah, they are. They are, yeah. So, and then what I would do is I would then recommend developing a presentation of findings that can be presented to senior management team, covering the results from questionnaires, one-to-one interviews, and focus groups.
So there's a lot going on. I'm assuming the company at this point should have a good understanding of the areas they need to address to improve their food safety culture program. So what's their final step? What do they do next?
Well, the BRCGS Global Standard for Food Safety requires site senior management shall have a documented strategic plan for the development and continuing improvement of the food safety culture. So if you actually go to the standard and look at it, then there are three key things. The first one is, within that plan, you have to define the activities involving all sections of the company. So what are you actually going to be doing? The action plan also needs to clearly define timescales and what activities need to be undertaken. And then the final one is the review. So how often are you actually going to review the effectiveness? So the Food Safety Culture Committee needs to take the findings of the questionnaire, one-to-one interviews and focus group, and develop the sort of the food safety culture plan. And when you develop the plan, BRCGS would recommend that the company is better off tackling three or four key issues well than 20 things badly. And I think there's a general acceptance within industry that there are only so many resources available. So like we say, we prefer to do a small number of things well than a large number of things badly. And then depending on the plan, BRCGS have quite clearly stated that, you know, changing culture isn't a quick fix, and therefore some people's plans could extend up to even 5 years. However, where you do extend it over 5 years, then it's important that we've got activities being carried out each year to demonstrate that, you know, that the plan is alive and is working. So that is an overview of how to implement a food safety culture program.
Well, John, that's a lot to think about, and it definitely sounds like Enlighten, the model and the processes that are within that, covers a lot of what you've just said.
Yes, so you can do all your analysis, you can get all your data. Yeah, no, it is. It's very comprehensive.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, John. Thanks for listening to our latest edition of Food Safety The Fact. In our upcoming podcasts, we'll be exploring BRC Global Standards for Food Safety, and the great food safety tool we're giving away is 1 month's free access to the online 4Cs culture model application, which has been developed by Tutrain and the University of Sunderland. To access that 1 month's free trial, you can drop Alison an email, so that's alison@tutrain.co.uk, and details of the 4Cs culture model and Alison's contact details are given in the show notes. This podcast was brought to you by Tutrain and featured John Husband of Tutrain. It was directed and produced by Bethany Donkin and featured me, Dawn Schaefer, asking the questions. Join us next time for more on food safety culture.